at the end of the day, you're the guy who's drafting, or you're the person who's drafting, and you're responsible for creating the team that you create. So, you know, just go out and bet on yourself, man.
Episode 42 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Ginella and Mauricio Rubio. How are you guys doing on Labor Eve?
Oh, I'm doing a lot better than you guys are, I think.
I don't know. I'm pretty excited.
Oh, okay. Maybe not.
Yeah, I think we're ready, and I think we got a lot of the kinks out. And at one point, I sent Brett a text today about our strategy, and he's like, "Dude, get out of my head! I was just thinking that."
It was a little frightening. So we've got the way of life going. I think we're in good shape. So no strange weather to speak of here.
It was supposed to
snow, and then it just got weird. I think it hailed. I don't know, something like that.
We should call Ben just to hear him describe what's going on in Boston and how he can't get home. Apparently.
Yeah, he's stranded with Craig.
Oh, he is? Oh, my God. Man. That was the whole U.S. Airways thing he was tweeting, and he was getting mad at them. And I think I threw out a follow Friday to them sarcastically, and they were just like, "Thanks, Mike."
Oh, I saw that. I did see that.
That's good stuff.
That's awesome. We are going to answer a couple of reader emails this week. One of them we are going to sort of weave into a little pre-labor discussion, and then we are going to jump into outfield. And outfield is bulky, so we're not going to waste a whole lot of time. So let's just start right up. You can find us all at baseballprospectus.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. Mao's at MRubio52. You can reach us via email as a podcast, flagsflyforever@baseballperspectives.com. If you want your questions answered, send them in. We keep getting more and more emails, which is super fun. We ask that you rate and review us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio app. It does fun things and magic CEO, SEO, DEO stuff I've never even heard of. So let's move on. We'll start with email number one. We got this from Sean. It was a long email, so I'm going to read the abridged version. Brett and Mike, I have to start by saying thank you because your discussion of Javi Baez on the last pod got me through a terrible flight. Thanks for making being squeezed in the middle seat between two 350-pound guys with lightly functioning AC on the plane. I assume there was supposed to be something after that, making it seem tolerable, making it seem pleasurable. I don't know. Hopefully it didn't suck. This guy has a keeper question. 15 players, 9 pitchers, 10 bench spots. $300 cap auction, 9 keepers. He's got a strong core of 6 guys. They're all no doubters. There's no point in reading them off. They're super impressive. It's as Ben would say, certainly a no big deal, but kind of big deal situation. So here's the actual question. My issue is in filling the last 3 spots. I'm leaning towards rounding out my 9 with Travis d'Arnaud at $7. It's a 2-catcher league. Ben Revere at $8 and AJ Pollock at $5. But I have a few options I keep looking back at and worrying about keeping 5 outfielders. Start 5 outfielders, but that would be a weird position to be in on draft day. This leaves me with $179 in the auction, which I feel pretty good about considering my keeper strength. My other options include the following guys. Would you recommend swapping one of them out for either Pollock or Revere or even Darno? That's John Segura at 17, Justin Masterson at 13, Nate Eovaldi at 4. Thanks for all the work you do on the pod and any advice you can provide. Thanks, Sean. So there's the simple question, and then there's the more interesting point. So I'm going to throw it off to Mike because you covered some of this in your state of the position today at BP on the outfield. So tell Sean why it's okay to keep five outfielders.
Well, you know, I think the main reason is if you're getting value out of, you know, all five of your outfielders, and I mean, in this case, you know, we didn't go through every single one, and I won't do it again, but you know, three of the five, or at least two of the five that we didn't mention, are like, you know, Trout and Harper, who are way undervalued, so they're no-brainers. But honestly, I don't think you throw back Ben Revere at 8 or AJ Pollock at 5. I mean, even in a mixed, this is a deep enough format where you're still, if this is a 12 team, you know, maybe I'd think about throwing Pollock back just because there'd be some better options out there. I happen to like Pollock better than others, so I don't think I'd do that. But you're really looking at throwing back value in exchange for three players. You know, quite honestly, Segura is the guy here maybe you think about keeping. I just think in a mixed, even if there's a bounce back, it's a lot of speed. Masterson's a big no for me. I know, Brett, you like him better than I do, but I don't think even you like him this much.
No, oh, definitely not this much, no.
Yeah, and Eovaldi's okay, and he's another guy in a mixer I kind of look at like, eh. So I'm not really for keeping these guys in exchange of, you know, exchange for three really good keeps. And, you know, what you do is you kind of shift that money in an auction league to other positions. And even if you have to spend a little bit more money at those other positions, you're getting the value back in Revere and Pollock. So that's the way I look at it. You got to take that value where it comes. You cannot throw away value and you know, wind up just chasing in the auction and losing it. You know, I've written about this in, you know, great detail. I've kind of written pieces talking about, you know, inflation value versus, you know, straight value at a draft. And you're not just losing that straight value on Revere and Pollock. You're losing a significant amount because of the inflation that I'm sure you're going to have, Sean.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add to that. If you start five outfielders, don't be afraid to keep five outfielders because you're going to use all of them and they are good value. So just don't overthink it. That's really it.
Yeah, you're going to end up making a bad pickup when it comes to outfield depth if you're not going to keep the five solid guys that you have. So that thing thins out pretty quick.
This it does, but it does and it doesn't.
Yeah.
I guess. So thank you, Sean, for writing in. We are going to get to question number two, and this is the perfect question to have this week. It's from Cody. Gents, is it really better to use several ranking sources to help form my master ranking list? Let's say I take a simple average of five rankings. That will help get me the wisdom of a party, if not a crowd. If I follow that average pretty closely, however, it will also most likely prevent me from getting any breakouts. Each person preparing rankings has his or her own biases and players they are higher and lower on than others. Javi Baez. By using an average, I will probably have a pretty safe draft but might not hit on enough upside surprises to win the league. On the flip side, if I use one ranking list that I believe in, adjusting for league and personal preferences, I will undoubtedly be too high on some and low on some. I will also draft a few breakout candidates that the author believes in. I've tried it both ways over the years and don't have a conclusive answer, so I thought I'd see what the great minds of Flags Fly Forever thought. Thanks, Cody. So this really fits in perfectly with labor. I mean, we're 24 hours out from the draft right now, and this is exactly what Mike and I do to form our composite rankings. Mike does his rankings. I do my rankings. We smash them together, and it compresses each of our individual leanings into what I think is a very strong draft list, and a stronger draft list than I think I would come up with on my own. So I'm gonna throw it out to Mike. What do you think is the biggest advantage of going with a consensus of thought, whether it's two people in our case or more than two in Cody's case.
Well, to preface that, I will say to Cody's point that there is a point. If you combine like five or six lists, I think you're right. You kind of wind up running the risk of drafting, it might even be a good team, but kind of a team that might finish fourth or fifth. And I think I heard you guys talking about this on Tino a little bit last week where, you know, I get it. You want value on your team. And I'm kind of paraphrasing what I heard on that show. But if you just go nothing but value and you don't get any upside guys, I think Cody's correct. You know, I think you're going to kind of finish fourth or fifth. But the biggest advantage to me, you know, so, you know, as Brett said, I'll send Brett the list and Brett will send it back. And usually what winds up happening is a guy that I was like kind of really high on, I'll kind of look at Brett's ranking. I'll be like, you know, that sort of makes more sense. Like I know I'm really high on this guy, but I kind of look at the new rank. I go back out and look at the ADP and it's like, yeah, I'm still, you know, 10 or 15 slots over ADP on this guy. I'm probably going to get him and I'm not going to go super crazy, you know, and kind of waste a pick one or two rounds before I should. I think that's the biggest use of this, of kind of combining rankings is you sort of avoid being out on an island where you're like, okay, like I love, you know, let's say I'll try to find a good example of somebody that we don't really love so we don't give away the store. You know, I love Jose Reyes, and you know, Jose Reyes I have ranked, you know, 20th. And I see a bunch of composite rankings where, you know, he's in the high 40s, low 50s, maybe he's 40. That's a good case where it's like, yeah, you know what? Like I love Jose Reyes this year, but maybe I can move him down to 30 or 35 and I'll still get him.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, you know, when I look at my list against Mike's, I can pretty easily tell what my biases are when I just put together a draft list, and vice versa as well. And it kind of tones it down a little bit. I tend to have a little bit more faith in younger players, and I have a little bit more faith. In general, I tend to be a little bit more risk taking, I think that the combination of what we both bring here makes sort of evens us both out a little bit. I think the value stuff is, and you know, to hit on the point that you were talking about before, I think it's very dependent on the league. And this is a 15 team mixed league, so I completely agree. We need something other than chalk in order to win. And you know, these aren't leagues where you're just trying to finish towards the top to get some money. These are expert leagues. These are pride leagues. So we want to win. There's no prize for finishing in fifth place. No one cares who finished in fifth place in labor last year. I could not tell you who that was. I could tell you that Steve won. I could tell you that that's what we want to do this year. So mixing and all that stuff is important. I think, you know, in an only league, I think you can win with that sort of strategy by kind of keeping values really in check. And I think, you know, I think that that's really Mike's philosophy in both of these situations. So I think we're not revealing anything earth shattering here or particularly new. So go ahead, Mike.
I think that, you know, the other thing I'll say that's interesting about the composites is what usually happens, you know, so, you know, in a draft in particular, in an auction in theory, you could buy like, you know, three or four superstars and put some scrubs together. In a draft, that's never going to happen because obviously it's a snake or windshield wiper. So you're going to get a star and then a second level player, and et cetera. So what often happens is when Brett and I both strongly agree on a player above his ADP, we can almost see the team that we're going to put together. Like last year, you know, we agreed on Giancarlo Stanton. I think he was going in the third round, probably late third round. We had him both ranked like middle of the second. We kind of like, oh yeah, we're probably going to get him, like barring something weird happening. Same thing happened with Albert Pujols. Same thing happened with Chase Utley. So that's really another use of kind of combining rankings, is you can kind of see how things are going to, you know, come together. And again, I think this is my philosophy about this: combining two rankings, maybe three, is good. I think Cody, if you do combine too many, that's where you kind of run into that risk of having no preferences. And really, this kind of goes in the broader sense of being a better fantasy player. I like the idea of if you combine rankings or if you use bids, you know, use my bids when they come out later this month, next month. If you see something that's, I don't like this or I don't agree with this, to me, that's good news because that's a sign that you're starting to think and analyze and maybe become a better player. So there's a lot of mechanics to this. I would say don't get too mechanical with averaging. Don't go overboard with it.
I think the final thing, because you guys really summed that entire thing up perfectly, but I think the final thing I want to say to kind of tie that up into a nice little bow, whenever you're really stressing about where you're disagreeing with certain rankings and you're kind of really wrestling over that, always bet on yourself. Because at the end of the day, you're the guy who's drafting, or you're the person who's drafting, and you're responsible for creating the team that you create. So, you know, just go out and bet on yourself, man.
That's absolutely true. You will always be happier taking a guy that you believe in than taking a guy because you read about him in a sleeper column somewhere. Always. 100% of the time.
Yeah, and so. that's even true of, you know, if it's a guy you like and you take a stand on in the third round when he's going in the fifth and he tanks, you're still going to be happier than if you take some guy in the third round that tanks that you had no feel for one way or the other.
Indeed. So with that said, we are going to move on to outfielders. Mal, I'll give you the option. Are we going to musical break or are we going straight through? Through?
Let's plow it.
Let's go right through. All right. So outfield is a very, very deep position. So what we are going to do this week is, since we're going to cover pretty much everybody, we are going to... we're going to go straight into the 2015 tiers. We're going to skip over the look back at 2014. We know enough about how these guys did last year. It's fun to have that conversation, but for this week and for starting pitching week, we're going to jump right over it to get into the good stuff. The outfield rankings this week at Baseball Prospectus are a tag team effort from JP Breen and Nick Schlein, and we are looking at it right in front of us. So we're going to discuss this. I believe the first half of this list will be up when this podcast is up, and the second half is scheduled to go up on Wednesday. So Mike Trout, awesome.
That's controversial, I think.
He's pretty good.
He's okay.
Yeah, he's all right.
is there any, we'll just get this out of the way, is there any argument to make to take anyone other than Trout number one overall this year?
Not good ones, no. There aren't many good ones.
Yeah, if you really believe, and I disagree with this argument, if you really believe that Clayton Kershaw provides so much value, and I think this is a bad argument, then maybe you take Kershaw. But yeah, I think it's Trout.
Sounds good. So I don't think we're going to get much disagreement from any of us on the guys that show up in the five-star category. You got the, you know, the four guys who are pretty consistently going in the top 10 of drafts. Strat at the top, then McCutchen, Stanton, and Carlos Gomez. So I guess we'll start with McCutchen. There's sort of a little bit more diversity of thought around McCutchen than Trout, for obviously. He's generally going at the two spot, but there are people who are taking Stanton over him. Our guys that are pushing up players like Paul Goldschmidt and possibly Jose Abreu and Clayton Kershaw. I've seen all varieties of that at this point. So where do you guys sit on the McCutchen versus Stanton argument? I mean, this is clearly an argument that is useless for us to have for labor because we are picking at the back wheel and both of these guys are going to be hilariously gone by the time we pick. But if we had the number two pick, Mike, who would you be lobbying to take?
I would take McCutchen. You know, Giancarlo, obviously a terrific player. He's got 40 home run potential, but and I think he'll be fine, but we still haven't seen him after that awful beaning. But even beyond that, I think even without the beaning, I probably would just go with Kutch. He's just a consistent five-category guy and really strong in those five categories. And I think there might even be a little bit more power coming, even though the park certainly doesn't help him. Again, this is a wonderful argument to have if you have the two or the three pick. But I'd go with Kutch.
Yeah, I'm going. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going with Kutch as well here. I think you can start to make the argument because we don't know if McCutcheon's going to slide back into that 30 home run and more 15 to 20 steals instead of the 25 threat. But even if he sees the uptick in home runs, the 10 to 15 or the 15 to 20 steals that he can provide is nothing to sneeze at. I am a notorious Stanton lover, but the advantages that McCutcheon provides you in stolen bases and the extreme advantage he provides you in batting average is, it's difficult to overlook. And we're at the point where we're splitting hairs between the two players. And, 314 is really hard to ignore.
Yeah, in the interest of hashtag analysis, he's really good. it would be McCutcheon for me as well. So moving down sort of the draft list, you get Stanton and McCutcheon are gone in the first couple of picks. Then the next outfielders off the board are Carlos Gomez and Jose Bautista. Now, Bautista checks in a couple players deep into the four-star tier in our group behind a bunch of names that we're all familiar with. Guys like Adam Jones and Ryan Braun and Jacoby Ellsbury. So what is it that you guys think is making Jose Bautista a sort of a no-doubt first-round pick at this point, even though he's really, the power, we all know about the power, but he is injured somewhat often, at least more often than you'd like to see out of someone who you'd be anchoring your team with, and the batting average is a question mark. Is it is it sort of the resurgence of offense in Toronto with the addition of Donaldson and the like, or is it or are people betting on Bautista raising the batting average?
I think it's that he follows everybody on Twitter and they feel guilty for not drafting him.
That's a fair point.
But honestly, he's going to see a spike in contextual stats, or at least you could project that out pretty safely if he stays healthy. I think that's what's aiding it. I think there's a lot of positive feelings about what's going on in Toronto. He's a tremendous hitter. He's got tremendous plate discipline, and he's shown the power pretty consistently. He had a bounce back in the power department from a down 2013 that was a little injury riddled and all that. But the other names I have to take over Bautista just because I think that there are enough concerns about him that maybe the batting average redeflates and he's working. I think of him as more of a 260 hitter rather than a 290 guy. So. But I think everybody's feeling good about Toronto.
Yeah, I think what it is, yeah. I think the reason he's ranked highly, and again, he's a few slots too high, not like way too high. I think there's some recency bias. It's the first year he had since 2011 where he played 150 or close to 150 games. Biggest average year since that ridiculous 2011 campaign. Don't get me wrong, Bautista's really good, and I think if he's healthy, you're still looking at 30 home runs, and like Mao said, just 100 runs batted in. But I would agree, you'd think that average is going to dip, and as a result, he might not play to that first round value. He seems like the guy in the first round that could play more to a second or third round value, but people are kind of paying for last year.
Yeah, you look at some of the numbers in his profile. The thing that some people I think don't necessarily realize about Bautista is that he hits so many balls in the air that his BABIP is very low for his career. He's a guy who had a 287 BABIP last year, and that was in the realm of abnormally high for him. he's a career 271 BABIP guy. So, you know, if he plays to about his career average there, you're looking at about a 270 batting average, which I think is reasonable. I think expecting 285 again is not wise. But I mean, obviously, if you're in an on-base league, Bautista goes from questionable first rounder to no doubt first rounder. He just, those games played, 92 games in 2012, 118 games in 2013. I mean, that's pretty much the same playing time that Troy Tulowitzki had those years.
Yeah, although, you look at the numbers per game, and again, it's that shallow or standard mix versus deeper mixed philosophy. In a 10 or 12 team mix, I think you look at it like, yeah, if I can get 100 games of that, I'll just muddle along with 60 games of a replacement level guy, and I'll take Bautista.
Yeah, and it's easier to do that in the outfield than it is to do that at shortstop.
Right.
Yep.
So let's talk about the guys who are ahead of Bautista in the tiers. Adam Jones, I don't think you'd really get an argument from most people. I mean, Jones sort of falls where he falls, depending on who doesn't mind taking the safe pick. He's about as safe as it comes when it comes to the end of the end of the first, beginning of second, wherever he falls in your draft. So let's talk about Ellsbury, because Ellsbury's been an interesting point in our consensus rankings, just because I think you're higher on Ellsbury than I am. So what do you think Ellsbury is this season?
I think he is what he was last year. I think the power spike is legitimate. I don't think he's going to hit 20 home runs, but I think that Yankee Stadium aids him. He could hit 15. I think he's going to run, and he stole what? I think it was 46 last year, if memory serves.
39.
Okay. But I think 45 is a realistic expectation for him. And, here's somebody who, he's another example. Everyone's like, he's injury prone. But now you have a guy that, except for 2012, he's played 134 more games through the last 4 years. He'll miss some time. I think the idea that he'll, have a serious injury and miss half the season's overblown. So I always like guys, when a guy's a speed-only guy, I'm completely fine with downgrading him, particularly in mixed. When a guy provides 15 home runs or in that range, I think you have to stop doing that. And that's my thinking with Ellsbury. Now, I did downgrade him a little bit for labor, just because I kind of looked at it like, well, he might be there for us with our pick. And sometimes that's a gut check. Like, I don't think I'd be comfortable taking Ellsbury even at the end of the first round. But somewhere in the second round, I'd be very comfortable taking him. I know some people, and Brett, you might be one of these people, don't feel that way.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on Ellsbury and the injury thing. I think the injury thing at this point is completely overblown. I mean, you have a guy who, essentially, it's not like he's a soft tissue injury guy. I mean, going back to the beginning of his career, he missed all that time in 2010 with a rib injury. After he got clocked by Adrian Beltre, right, going out for a fly ball. Am I remembering that right?
That sounds right.
And then just never got back on the field. In 2012, I think he dislocated his shoulder. I'm looking at the injury database, Baseball Prospectus. Shoulder subluxation, landed on at second base. That's not fun, but that's a fluky injury. And then he fractured his right foot from a foul ball. So you're not talking about the guys who you get concerned about with injuries, see this over and over again, are guys that have soft tissue injuries, guys that groin strains, strain obliques, hamstrings. Those are the kind of injuries that are more recurring than freak injuries. So the argument against Ellsbury is not an injury argument. The most fascinating number with Ellsbury, at least from last year when he was really quite good, is that he scored 71 runs.
I didn't realize it was that low.
It's shockingly low. And I'm looking at his splits, and we're not going to spend this much time on each player, just the very top, or else this episode's going to go about 5 hours. But he hit leadoff in 49 games, and he hit third in 93 games, and he scored 71 runs. And that, you know, that gives you an idea of how bad the Yankees offense was last year. And frankly, it doesn't look like it's going to get all that much better this year. So I have to assume that number is going to get higher than 71. But he's not a big on base guy, so it's not a situation where he's going to walk enough to get on base at a 350, 360 clip and put himself in situation there. Looking at his last couple seasons, he had the 355 on base in 2013, but 328 in 2014 and 313 in 2012. So he kind of is what he is at this point. And I think he's a very solid second round pick. I'll be very curious to see where he ends up going tomorrow. But I definitely agree that the power is legit in Yankee Stadium. I think 15 is perfectly reasonable, and we'll see how it goes from there. So this leads us to the one last question that we'll talk about this tier. But do you believe in Ryan Braun's thumb?
No, I've been kicking this around in draft prep for quite some time. I think my inclination is to believe in Ryan Braun's thumb because I'm just somebody who wants to believe in the best in people, right? So, for me, I'm on the Ryan Braun train, and I think where we have him ranked, in between Ellsbury and above Bautista is just a little high for me, but I understand how we reached that conclusion. I think I would probably be reaching for Bautista or Puig before Ryan Braun, but he's in that conversation for me to where, when my turn comes up, in third, fourth round or wherever, that's a name I'm starting to think about. And if it comes down to the mix of the names that are in here, when we're talking about Jones, Ellsbury, Braun, Bautista, and Puig, just the things that he can provide for you, even if the stolen bases don't come all the way back, or even if he's the type of player that can really help you out quite a bit if the upside pays off. So that's, I want to believe, in short.
Yeah, I'm really a big believer in Braun, and I think as far as the team goes, I'm probably one of the people who push the rankings. Braun's another guy like Ellsbury I had pretty high, and I kind of, from a practical standpoint, pumped the brakes on a little bit. He's been swinging. Apparently, he says the thumb feels good, and we know the deal. He's got to face pitching or live pitching before we can really have a conclusion. But the surgery, a similar surgery worked for Shane Victorino, and I know it's a bit of a different situation with Braun, but usually if the surgery doesn't work, from what I've read and understand about it, he wouldn't even be gripping a bat. He'd still be struggling. Or he'd have to kind of use the pad again. So I think he's going to be okay. There's certainly some uncertainty there. And, this is the thing about labor. We're drafting it early to mid-February. I wish we had another month to kind of see him in spring training, but we don't. So I'm kind of being gutsy and saying that Braun is going to bounce back this year.
Yeah, I mean, you're comparing like to like with Braun, right? I mean, you're not comparing his comments to everyone else's comments. You're comparing his comments about his thumb to his previous year's comments about his thumb.
That's correct.
And he's never been a guy who's been extraordinarily positive about the outlook of his thumb. So hearing him talk about it in a very optimistic way is about as reassuring as you can get without actually seeing it in action.
Yeah, and that's a good point. He's been that way with other injuries where, he's never been shy about saying I'm hurt and I'm not 100%. That's a good point, Brad.
Yeah, I'm with it on Ryan Braun. Ryan Braun has always been a guy who I have he's been a guy who I've enjoyed watching. That luster has not been lost on with all of the PED nonsense, but more with the T-shirt line. But that bothers me more than the PED use. But that's just me. But yeah, I'm feeling good about Ryan Braun for 2015, and it makes me happy because I want to feel good about Ryan Braun for 2015. So let's kind of scan over the rest of the four-star tier here. Who's someone who's really in danger of being a bust in this group? Mike, who's the guy that you look at and say that's a guy I might not necessarily want for the price he's going at?
You know, it's tough because, you know, obviously when you're talking about the four star, they're all guys that you're going to like, and we drove the rankings, so we'd like a lot of these guys. I think that they're, I'll just bring this is a good opportunity to kind of bring up a mistake I see a little bit. I'm going to go with Matt Kemp, and there's two reasons. One is that I think a lot of the concerns with Kemp, people are looking at his second half last year and kind of going, he's back and he's going to be great. And it's like, well, I took Kemp last year in Tout Wars, and I believe in him. I really like him. But it doesn't mean that he's not going to go through one of those periods, whether it's due to injury or just due to, you know, a slump, that he isn't quite the elite player that he was, you know, that one year that he had where he was just ridiculous. But the other thing, and this is where I feel it's real life versus fantasy. So everyone's looking at the Padres and going, "Oh yeah, they're terrific. They're gonna, you know, they're gonna win 90 games and they're a contender." And that all might be true, but the Petco effect hasn't gone away, and I think Kemp is going to be dampened somewhat by Petco. I don't want to overstate it. I think he belongs here, but I could easily see Kemp putting up like a 3-star and even a low 3-star performance. And I think some people are kind of putting him at the top of this tier or, you know, close to it. I think that's a mistake.
Matt, what about you?
I'm going to go ahead and take the low-hanging fruit, and I'm also going to preface it with all of the qualifiers that Mike made. And, you know, these are guys that we like, and I specifically like this player, and I'm rooting hard for him. But, you know, the basement on Billy Hamilton is just floor. It's low. It's extraordinarily low. He ran into issues, you know, second half of last year. You know, it's just as possible that he reaches a 70 stolen base plateau as he hits, you know, low 200s and just doesn't ever get on base enough and winds up with a really weird slash line. Now, he's going to play because I think the Reds are just in that situation now to where, you know, it'd have to be just god awful for him not to play. But I think that's a guy that I could probably start, you know, bust out the most on this list. I hear you on Matt Kemp as well, and that was actually going to be a guy that I was going to take as well, Mike, but I think I'm going to go with Hamilton here.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw this out there. I love Jason Hayward, but I'm starting to get a little. I'm less concerned in the long term, but I'm a little concerned in the short term that he's just not going to be the kind of roto player that I think people are expecting him to be. He should hit the top of that St. Louis lineup, and it should be a reasonably strong lineup. So he should be able to kind of do what he does best. But if the power doesn't really show up, I don't see him stealing a ton of bases, so it would make him certainly a very valuable real life player. But he's a guy who doesn't have a super low floor, but I think there's a higher percentage chance of him being a disappointment where he's being drafted than some of these other guys.
You know, those are actually the three names I was considering. So that means they're all going to overperform, right?
Probably, as long as no one took Christian Yelich. I heart Christian Yelich.
I do too. I really want that to happen in a big way.
He's going to go for 25 or something like that in Tout Wars because everybody hearts him.
That's true.
In the NL.
His ADP just keeps rising and rising.
Yeah.
So let's move into the. Is there anyone you guys want to touch on in the 4-star range before we move on?
I think we're good, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, this could be a 5-hour like show if we talked about these guys. I'm sure we'll get to them at some point during the year.
That's true. One quick question, 30-second question before we move on. Michael Brantley, closer to the 5-star group or closer to the 3-star group?
Mike. I'm going with closer. Oh, sorry.
I think closer to 3-star, although he's right in the middle for me, so it's tough. But I think last year was more of a ceiling than, you know, a sign of him getting possibly even better.
Mal?
Oh, my turn now. You know, two things. Very interesting that nobody took him, and most likely the bust out. And I think he's also closer to the 3-star, just because the 5-star is just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I think no one took him because his like floor, I think his absolute floor is a solid 3-star guy. I think that batting average is completely legit, and that batting average will carry him even if the power regresses. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think he's pretty real, and even if he's a 15-15 guy, if he can hit well over 300, that it cannot be. I mean, we've tried to overstate it, but it cannot be overstated how important that is in these days of low batting averages.
Yep.
So 3-star tier. The 3-star tier is a little chunky, and then the 2-star tier just goes on for like days. So, who would win in the steel cage match, Charlie Blackman or Corey Dickerson? Mike, I know how you feel because you have Blackman ranked ahead of him. But Mao, do you agree? Disagree?
I agree. But Blackman's leaving with like some ears bitten off, and he's missing some fingers when he leaves the cage. I mean, it's, you know, I think, and Mike, I completely understand. I just, you know, I think it's a lot closer than the distance between the rankings here shows. So, you know, for me, I like Blackman. I do like where he's ranked. It's just a lot closer than it seems.
I think so, and you know, this is kind of worth, and I point this out even to the staff who I think sometimes see a tier or a ranking, and you know, I'll get a comment when I put the tiers here, like, no, you know, this guy should be 2 slots higher, and it's like, well, I put these together off of a bid limit, and I think these are guys that I have like $2 apart, so to me, that's not really a lot. Maybe they should be closer. Maybe they should be a dollar apart or even tied. It's not as strong a preference as it seems. Like, let's just put it that way.
Sounds good. Yeah, I think they're reasonably close. I between the two, I'd want Dickerson though. I think his skill set is safer to bet on year to year. Even though I'm not someone who thinks Charlie Blackman's going to fall off the face of the earth. I think he's going to be quite solid in 2015. But I think Dickerson has room to grow in the power department, even beyond what we saw last year. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he could hit 30 in cores, and he's certainly not going to steal the bases that Blackman is. But they both could hit over 300. I mean, that park does ridiculous things to people. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there, because we were all, this is literally the exact opposite spot we were in last year. Right, last year there were like 5 guys who could have been the third outfielder for the Rockies, and no one really knew who it was going to be or particularly liked any of them. I put Dickerson on my sleeper piece last year just because he was a Rocky and because he might get playing time. But it was, you know, the I was not praising him as a player. I was praising the opportunity. And, you know, sometimes that works out. And, you know, now you're talking about possibly too many guys for these same spots on the same team. So it's amazing what a year can do. But I agree that they're tight. I would just lean Dickerson personally. So let's go into some of the power guys. If you had to pick if you had to pick a player between the power bats in this tier, and we're talking Nelson Cruz, Jay Bruce, I guess is still considered a power bat, Dickerson Cespedes, and Marcell Ozuna, who is going to hit the most home runs in 2015? Mal.
Oof. Old habits die hard. But, you know, I'm going to go with Cruz, and I think it's going to be between Cruz and Bruce over at the top of that tier. But it's, you know, I still really like Nelson Cruz. I still think he's you know, the power's one of the last things to go, you know, an old hitter. So I'm gonna gamble on Cruz.
Mike?
I think I have to go with Cruz as well. This isn't a multiple choice, or I have to pick somebody else, is it?
A and B, but not C?
Yeah. I'm going to go with Cruz. He loses a little bit, you know, with the move to Safeco, but this isn't like a Robinson Cano situation. I mean, the dude hit last year. He might lose some power. I still think we have to see with Bruce, like, what happened last year and if he's going to bounce back. I think he's going to bounce back. I think he belongs in this tier. I just am not sold on him automatically being like a 30-plus home run guy. I think 25 might be more realistic, whereas I think Cruz is a pretty safe bet for 30 or more. You know, the other guys here, I like Ozuna a lot. I just don't know if he's going to add more. It's a tough park if you're not Giancarlo Stanton to hit home runs. And I'm just not a Cespedes fan.
Yeah, I think Cespedes has a shot at it, but... But yeah, I think it's Cruz too. I think he has enough strength that Safeco won't damper him that much. I mean, no one thinks he's going to hit 40 home runs again, but I think 30 is reachable if he stays healthy. So is there anyone in the 3-star range that that you guys feel particularly strongly about?
2-star.
3-star. Before we move on.
Oh, sorry. No, I mean it's Nelson Cruz for me. Oh, that's my guy. But I don't know. I think I feel like Chu's more of a 2-star guy at this point. But I mean I get why he's in the 3-star.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, we're gonna have this fight, huh?
No, not really. Yeah. I think he's firmly in the 3-star. But you know, I know some people are really down on him, and you know, you're just part of that crowd. That's cool.
Oh, part of that crowd.
Mal's going to pick a fight with Pekoda.
I am. I'm totally going to pick a fight with Pekoda. Oh, I'm fighting Pekoda all off season, man.
My guy would be. Oh, did you have more to say on Chu, or were you?
No, that's it. You scared me away. So
I didn't mean to. Yeah, Brett can name my guy without even like me saying it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's Ben Revere. This is a valuation thing, you know, Revere, you know, we know he can't hit for power. There was some talk in Philly. I don't know if you guys heard this, that he was going to try to, and I think it was Ryan Sandberg who generated that talk, and we all had a good laugh at Rhino. But Revere's a guy who can put up most of what Billy Hamilton put up last year in terms of the steals, and he's not going to cost nearly as much. In standard mix, I don't really like making a play like for guys like Revere, but in deeper mix and other leagues, he's a good guy to get where he's going. He's going to steal bases and he's going to provide a fair amount of value.
Yeah. I mean, his question mark is the same question mark that Ellsbury has, just a little bit, just even to a further extreme. It's just that whether, you know, the Phillies offense is going to be terrible. And there's a difference between a guy like Revere being a 2-category contributor and a 3-category contributor. So if he's in the, you know, 65 to 70 range in runs, that's probably weak, but that's less attractive than if he is up in the, you know, sort of 85-ish area.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's an average OBP thing too. In an OBP league, you want to, I'd say he's a 2-star in an OBP league.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't have too much to add with this tier. I also like Marcell Ozuna. I think the people who kind of doubt what he's doing at this point are just grasping at straws. I don't really get Cole Calhoun all that much. I understand what people are expecting out of him, but I think his sort of upside is attainable much later on. He's one of those guys that I think has just really fallen into the so underrated that he's overrated category, and that skill set is there for the taking, and you don't need to pay that price for it. But that's my opinion.
I'm in on that. Yeah,
that's fair enough.
Yeah. Also, I still love Matt Holliday.
It's tough not to love him, right? Like it's just you still want to get that, like he might hit 20 home runs and just...
You know, the problem I have with Matt Holliday, he's just kind of that. If there was a picture of sort of old man skills in the dictionary, it'd be him. And I just worry he's going to have that year where he just kind of falls off the cliff and you get almost nothing.
Yeah, he's got a broad body, man. That is an old man body.
But I think you're right. I think he's finally at a the price he's going. He's actually like one of those like solid like third outfielders in mix. Like he'd kind of be a solid guy.
Yeah, and he struggled out of the gate last year, and he really turned it on. I mean, his second half was extraordinary. His second half was vintage Matt Holliday. I mean, 63 games, he hit .281, .367, .515 with 14 homers and 45 RBIs.
Yeah, I couldn't give him away. And the second half, he was just terrific.
Yeah, we know we don't do the whole, you know, project these 63 games out over the course of a full season, but you know, if you project those 63 games out over the course of a full season, that's pretty fucking good. So Matt Holliday, solid three-star guy. All right, so two-star, we'll go a little quicker here. Let's just throw out guys that we want to touch on here. Mike, is there anyone of interest, either good or bad?
Well, you know, let's start at the top. Let's ask about Mookie Betts. I know that some people are more aggressive on him than others. I remember we talked about him right when he got called up last year, and surprisingly, I was on the side of kind of being excited, and I think Brett, you and Mal, and particularly you, Brett, were kind of like, you know, let's put on the brakes a little bit. And then he showed more power than I think we were expecting, and actually a little less speed. Do you think he's too low here, or do you think this is kind of the safe call, like top of the two-star tier?
I think it's the safe call. I think you could definitely make the argument that he's a three-star. I think the power was more than we expected when he came up, but I'm not expecting that kind of power for a full season. This is sort of like an abbreviated Brett Laurie syndrome, almost, where he came up and hit for a lot of power when he got there, and it just never quite materialized after that. I mean, he had five homers and 52 games. I think 12 to 15, I think, is realistic. I'd be more comfortable in the 12 range. There's nothing wrong with that. And if he steals 20 to 25 bases to go along with it and hits, you know, 280, which is all certainly in the realm of possibility, then yeah, you're definitely looking at at least a three-star guy. But there's risk here. There's performance risk, and on top of performance risk, there's roster risk. I mean, if he doesn't play particularly well to start the year, the Red Sox have options. I mean, they don't need to stick with him and burn the service time when they have other guys in the fold. So, I don't think that's a likely scenario, but it's something that should factor in slightly.
Yeah, I think this is the perfect ranking, because you know you don't want to be paying too much for somebody with you know, this type of performance variability or this type of situation. But if he puts it together, that's something that you definitely want to get excited about. And this is the type of player that can shoot up pretty high. So, you know, top of the two steer, I think that's, you know, it and I don't know where your bid limit is. I haven't quite looked at it yet, Mike, but it's right around right for me.
I think I have him at, I think I'm at 15. I got to go look, but I think I have him. Let me see. Actually, I'm at 17, but that's an only bid, and I kind of pulled that up based on the ADP. I honestly think in an only start over that you're not getting him for 17 because of what we talked about. I think people are going to really push him, which honestly, if you push him that high, that to me is a mistake.
Yep.
Yeah, he's got the juice.
Yep.
Yeah, and Lowry's such a good point. You know, that guy, and even an expert ale only, and I know I've mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning again, he was going upper 20s for like 2 or 3 years after that abbreviated stint. And I can see people in that CBS ale this year pushing him into the low 20s pretty easily because of what Brett's talking about. He's got the juice, and yeah, I think he'll be a player, but we thought that about Brett Lowry. We thought that about Eric Hosmer. And I like bets, don't get me wrong, but you got to kind of be careful with guys like this, particularly in a redraft.
Yep. So let's have some fun with the rest of this list. Over under on home runs for JD Martinez in 2015, 24.5. Mal, you taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the under there. I still think he's a 15 to 20 threat for sure, and I think, you know, there's the upside for more. But there certainly were some flags last year that the performance isn't necessarily repeatable. So, you know, I don't think he completely craters, but I think he's not going to get to 25 plus.
Mike?
Yeah, same. Under 18 to 20 is kind of what I thought as you popped that question. And so Mal and I are pretty much on the same page.
Yeah, maybe I made the over under too high. I'm going to take the over. I think he hits 25 homers.
Oh, nice.
I think the power is real. I think the batting average is not. But I think he plays and he hits the homers. Over under on Lorenzo Cain's stolen bases, 27.5. Mike.
The over by a little bit. I kind of can see him around 30. That's a tough bet, though. That's a good line and better than the JD Martinez line because it's right there. Yeah, I'll take the over, though, just by a little bit.
I'm going to take the over as well. It's tough. I kind of want to take the under, but, you know, he's a good runner. He's a smart base dealer. I know last year was the high for him, but... some of that was playing time. I think he can definitely repeat that.
Yeah, I'm going to take the under, but slightly. I don't know that he's going to. I don't know that he's going to keep that part of the game up as highly as he did last year. I think 20 to 25 is probably the range that I'd be looking at for him. Over under on. Let's try the same number for JD Martinez, but for someone else. With the fences moved in, over under 24.5 home runs for Curtis Granderson. Mike.
I still got to go the under. I think the fences being moved are going to help somewhat. But I look at Granderson and I see a player. He's not quite diminished, but you know, he had that one huge, you know, what was it, 41 home run year in Yankee Stadium. And it's sort of one of those, like, one of these things is not like the other years. He's another one. He's kind of like JD Martinez. I think you're probably, I know he had 20 last year, but I think you're probably looking at about that again. You know, and I know he actually had 2 years with 40 plus home runs. I should amend that. But I think you're also looking at a player who, you know, he's 33 years old. He's not ancient, but I just have a hard time predicting that for somebody who has done what he's done the last couple of years. Also, the average isn't there, which kind of makes it tough because, you know, he's got to make contact to get that ball out of the park. I'm going with the under.
You know, he's a Chicago guy, so I'm automatically going to root for him. But, you know, that said, the smart money is for him to be the under on that. I am going to go with the over because that's a guy that I think I'm pretty picking out to have a bounce back year. He's one of the guys that I'm targeting just because I think the value's there. And I do think that the upside is there for 25 plus. So I'm going to go with the over just because I want to.
Sounds good. I'm going to take the under very slightly. I think he can approach 25, but I'm not betting on it. One more before we jump into whoever else we want to talk about. Over under on batting average for Dustin Ackley, 255. Mike.
Well, I'm going to take the over by a little bit. I think that I'm kind of a believer in Ackley, and I mean it's a caveat. I mean, I'm talking about a deeper league believer, but I think Ackley showed some improvement last year. You know, you're looking at 270 as a ceiling, so it's going to be tight. But I think he skims the over.
Yeah, my feelings on him are tepid at best. I think he's lukewarm. He's like a very, very warm embrace, but not a good one. But I don't know. That's a really good over under. I'm going to go ahead and take the over just to be contrarian. But it's going to be really tight.
Yeah, he's like a bowl of soup that you left out on the counter for like 45 minutes after you heated it up.
Yeah, yeah. Or like coffee that you forgot was on.
I hope you're not listening, Dustin.
I'll take the over. I still think there's some dormant hitting ability there that he hasn't tapped into fully yet. I don't think he's gonna hit 300 or anything, but I think 270 is within reach. I'd take the over on that number. So is there anyone else you guys want to touch on before we play America's favorite game?
Well, Will Myers is that's a guy. You know, he's still got some slack. And, you know, he's moving to a bad park, and there's all sorts of questions about him, about whether or not he's going to hit enough to utilize the power. But it's really difficult for me to leave that strength on the table. So I think he might be a three or even irresponsibly a four star performer this year.
Really? Wow. I think, you know, there's a couple guys I could touch on here, but I think the guy, Steven Souza, you know, Pakoda loves him. And, you know, I think they have some numbers. I forget where he ranked overall, but, and I remember the explanation. It was that his TAV translates well to the majors. And I like Souza a fair amount. And especially where his ADP is right now, he's kind of a guy that I think in a 15 team mix, you know, if he's falling toward that like back third of the draft, I think he's a really good guy to get. And I think he's also a guy that we're going to see in the next like few weeks is going to kind of shoot up to the point where he's not going to be a bargain.
Yeah. Well, I've seen this, this brought up by a couple different people, and I totally agree with it. I mean, what's the difference between Souza and Cole Calhoun?
It's not even name recognition. It's
besides the steals, and I mean that in the way that Souza can steal bases and Calhoun doesn't really.
Yeah, there's not much. Not much.
Souza's a good example. He's one of those better in like fantasy than real life. You know, I get in real life he's not the most exciting guy, but he's going to – you're absolutely right, Bray. He's going to steal some bases. He's going to hit some home runs. And even if he's only 15-15, I think that's realistic. And there's value there in that. And I think people are kind of looking at the Rays on the whole, looking at him as kind of a non-prospect and discounting him. You know, you look at some of the other guys in this tier, it's like, well, yeah, of course, he's no Jock Peterson. You know, Peterson could be a much better player in real life. But, you know, in fantasy, Souza's a guy that I think is going to get overlooked, in particularly in some softer leagues.
Completely agree. Anyone else before we move on?
I think I'll have mercy and say no.
Sounds good. So let's go straight to the business. Mao, who's your one star guy here?
Well, in a move that should absolutely surprise nobody if you've ever paid attention to me, my one star guy is absolutely Avisail Garcia.
Yeah, it's pretty much cheating to have him snuck into the one star tier here.
Look,
for you.
Yeah, look, when you guys put him in the one star, my heart grew a flutter because I was looking forward to this very exact moment when I was going to be able to talk about him in depth on a podcast. But look, I understand. He has not put together anything resembling a complete season at all during his career. There are genuine plate discipline concerns, and he's probably not going to be the guy that I thought he was going to be. And yeah, he's at the age where he has to start producing. You know, the middle 25s is, you know, that's when you start to that's where you start to separate the disappointments from the guys who end up having solid major league careers. But all of that said, the power is so real, and there's enough hit ability in the bat that I think he can put together a, you know, one of those 260 to 270, 25 home run with, you know, just empty OBP, which most leagues don't care about. You know, one of those types of seasons. I think that his final line from 2014 is pretty much the projectable line that you can make for what a full season from him looks like. And, you know, it's not great. It's not all-star level. But that's a guy that, you know, I think he's going to be a very solid contributor in fantasy leagues. So that's my guy.
All right. So, Mike, who's your guy?
I will add that I like Garcia, and again, similar to Souza, different profile. He's, you know, kind of better, I think, in fantasy than real life, and I think he could provide value here. I'm going to go with Michael Saunders. He kind of gets the Toronto bump, and, you know, it's about as favorable as a park boost as you can get outside of going to Coors, you know, moving out of Safeco. Just one of those players, you know, power, speed, tantalizes, kind of similar to all these one-star guys. I don't want to oversell this and say, yeah, you know, he's going to be a $25 player, but you're looking at some players here that are questionable, and I think he's a nice kind of sneaky, you know, end of a standard mixed play, you know, maybe fourth outfielder in a deeper mixed. Guy in an only that you kind of hope to get for 9 or 10, and he returns more value than that.
Cool. So I am going to not go the well-rounded player route, and I am going to take Michael Kadire out of this tier. I know his stats were boosted by Coors last year, but he's a good hitter, and I think that the Mets have a base for a good enough lineup that he should be able to contribute as a pretty solid mixed league outfielder while he's healthy. And, you know, last year was not a great year for him staying healthy, but he's not a guy who consistently misses, you know, 60 to 70 games a year. I should have brought this up before I started talking about Kadire, but I am at his games played now, and he's at the last, since 2009, 153, 157, 139, 101, 130, and then 49. So he's played in at least, well, he's played in the 101 in 2012, but even 100 games out of Kadire, with what I think he's capable of at that point in the draft, is not bad. He's not the 330 hitter that he was in Coors, but this is a guy who his last three years in Minnesota hit 276, 271, and 284. So he's solid average guy, can hit some homers even in Citi Field and put up some numbers. So that's my guy. So there we go. A crash course in outfielders.
I feel like this is the one star tier that always makes me happy. Always.
Yeah, there's with this many guys, it's easy to make everyone happy.
Yeah.
As opposed to catchers and shortstops where we're all like depressed.
Yeah. This was literally the most predictable game in the world though, with Garcia and Saunders in there. I mean, I could have literally written those speeches for you guys at this point.
I almost went with Goes, but I didn't want to go with yet another speed guy. Although Goes, I did an analysis, I think, toward the end of the year at BP where I compared Goes and Hamilton, and I was like, you know what? A lot of their baselines are similar. Goes might be a bad baseball player, but even if he gets on base like 31-32% of the time, the guy can fly.
Yeah, I can't cheat on my guy. I can't do it.
No, you would never.
No.
And there's some good points about Cuddy, by the way. I think I might take him up a buck or two and only.
Breaking news.
I love it. That's what I like to hear. So we will be right back. Wrap things up. Welcome back, and thank you for listening to episode 42 of Flags Fly Forever. We have been a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. I am Brett Sayer, and Mike has been Mike Gianella, and Mao has been Mauricio Rubio. Come read us at baseballprospectus.com. Go subscribe today and get all of our content, or all of our fantasy content. We're doing our positional series with our tiered rankings, dynasty rankings, three-year rankings. You name it, we are covering it in great detail. We are in outfield this week, as you can tell by the last hour and 10 minutes of this podcast. And we are going to hit starting pitching in another week or so. If you become a super premium member, then you get access to the Bat Signal, which is our fantasy answering service. You ask us whatever you want, and we will get an answer back to you generally in about 12 hours. Comes in handy this time of year when you're thinking about those last couple freezes or thinking about draft strategy. You can reach us via email, again, flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. We read all of your emails that you send in, and if we don't read it on the show, we will most likely reply anyway. We will do that. I'm going to say we will do that. We will do that. That is it. We will see you next week. We will now go talk more about our labor strategy, our top secret labor strategy, which we will unveil after the draft is over. With that, we will see you guys later. Bye-bye.
See you next week.
Man, did you just sign me up for answering emails? Is that what I heard?
Nah, we get like four emails.